Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture. Not really a roundtable this time around. It is another two-man table. I've got Adrian with me.
Hi, how's it going? I mean, you could fit two people at a roundtable.
I mean, I guess it just seems like a lot of excess seating.
Yin and yang, right?
Oh, very true. Okay. This week, we're going to talk about going in blind, just kind of experiencing things with minimal prior input, for lack of a better phrase, and not no input, like we'll get into that, but just the idea of experiencing something for the first time when you see it, when you play it, however you engage with it, rather than going in with a bunch of things that you've already been told to feel or think and all that. But before we get into that, Adrian, what have you been enjoying this week?
Yeah, so this week, I, as always, like a lot of Star Wars. So Andor is currently out with its second arc. So a lot of that, a lot of getting excited for Tales of the Underworld. Got some screeners for that, so coverage will be coming soon. And if you don't know where to get started with Tales of the Underworld and all that, I'll be doing like an article on like what you need to know. Because part of going in blind is like sometimes you need a little bit of context, and I think some of what we're going to talk about today is a lot of that. Something that you should go in blind to and play if you have someone who is a tabletop junkie is Sunderfolk, and playing a lot of Sunderfolk. Have you heard about Sunderfolk, Alex?
I have heard it. I have not engaged with it.
Well, we have some.
So good, tell me.
Yeah, well, we have a couple good interviews on butwhytho.net and a review of the game. It's like kind of like a table, you know, like Jackbox. Everyone knows Jackbox, right? Jackbox, but like D&D is, I think, the easiest way to explain it.
Oh, all
but,
right.
Like, I think it really does it like a disservice of how good it is to that. You know, someone just has to have it, someone streaming it, but your phone becomes like your controller, your
oh,
everything.
Cool. Okay, yeah.
So your stat sheets, interacting with the environment, interacting with like the village and NPCs, all done through your phone with like the main actions and like cutscenes and the DM stuff happening on like the one shared screen. Only one person has to have it. It's fantastic, man. It's so fun. Like if you want to
now
play,
is everyone playing or is one person still kind of DMing?
Everybody is playing one character because
the game is DMing itself.
Yeah, the game's DMing itself. Okay. One DM, one voice actor does all of the voices for all of the characters. So even in that, you have one person doing it. And I've played it in a bunch of different ways. And even if you're like a forever DM like me, I think it's really easy to just have four friends play it. And then you just kind of coach through and then see what new things happen, because it's kind of like different every time you play, because there's so many combinations and different ways to like solve all the puzzles and things. So it's so much fun. It's my favorite game of the year so far.
That does sound fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I totally get the whole like, oh, it's this but that. It's, I have so much hesitation around describing media as it's X, but with it. Like, I was trying to explain Sakamoto Days to someone, and I was like, it's John Wick if he opened a convenience store and his wife didn't die. Like, that's
okay,
the show.
Yeah, I like it.
but it's also like, it feels a little disingenuous because it's so much more than that, too. So, I don't know. It's something that I like. It's such an easy way to explain media, but I always have to try to catch myself to not default to it if I don't absolutely have to.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think it's just so hard because it's so new. It's a lot of like what like the Switch 2 is going to be doing, which is like crazy that like they're already doing it already of, you know, the shared play style. Only one person has to have it. You're connected through it.
That whole like download to play feature was on the 3DS, and I forgot about it until they announced it for Switch 2. And I was like, we used to have that.
Oh,
like,
really? I didn't have a 3DS.
There were certain 3DS games that you could download like just enough data to play co-op or multiplayer onto another DS as long as you're in range of each other.
So
I didn't use it a lot, but I used it sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like it's the best in couch co-op, I think, like even talking
about
it.
Yeah, it sounds like it's great for that.
Yeah, it's definitely the best couch co-op, but I've played it, you know, in like by myself, like in a hotel room. I've played it with my friends who all live in El Paso and I live in San Jose, so time zone difference, whatever. Because we even threw in my friend's girlfriend who had just like come home, and she's a nerd. She plays WoW just like her boyfriend and just like I do. So I was like, yeah, you'll like it. If you just go in blind, I'm pretty sure you'll have some fun, and I'll just step back and be the fifth person, just kind of like telling you how to play the game. Mm-hmm. And even that way worked, playing it with my friend who's like super hardcore, because the game is hard on its most challenging level. So like it has so much variability that I want to tell everyone about it and play it with everybody.
Nice, yeah.
So if I'm you have to a free check night, that out. Let me know, Alex. We can do like a four-player thing. I'm super down.
And it's Sunderfolk was the name?
Sunderfolk, yeah. All you need is a phone, because I have the game.
Oh, yeah. What platforms is it on?
It's on everything. PC.
Love it.
Nintendo Switch is one of the ones that they like really designed for. And PlayStation. Yes.
Honestly, I might have to play this tomorrow. I'm getting together with people, and we were going to do trivia, but this might be better.
Yeah, I think like if they're like tabletop people, I think this is definitely one to do.
Does it max out at four players?
It maxes out at four players, but I think it's very easy to like pass the phone and like have people take turns from what I saw. But also, if you get it early and play like a couple of rounds tonight, you can definitely have the fifth person experience of like, hey, this is like how like the tutorial level works, and then playing together and just seeing what people do makes you like the fifth DM, side DM, from my experience. So.
Nice. Okay, yeah, I'll check that out. Thank you.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
For me, what I've been enjoying, so I can't talk about Blueprints. I can't talk about Like a Dragon, because I think that was last week. So what I'm going to talk about is I finally got around to watching Transformers 1. Did you see that one?
Honestly, this is going to be like right what we're talking about. I didn't watch it because the trailer didn't seem like what everyone says it was. And
okay,
I haven't got around to it. I'm going to watch it. It's on my list. I just haven't watched it yet.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I'm a lifelong Transformers fan. Had like a little GoBot as a small child. I literally pulled out. I have like my original like Beast Wars Transformers, and I was like, saw them in a cabinet a half hour ago, and was like, I'm gonna pull these out and mess around with them because I love them. But Transformers 1, I think, is getting me back to the franchise in a really interesting way. It's definitely aimed at kids, which made it like there's a couple running jokes that I was like, I don't need this. Like, it's, you know, clearly this is, you're trying to focus group it and all that. But overall, I thought it was a really interesting approach to the origin story for Megatron and Optimus. I thought it had a lot of interesting things to do with that. And it was a heartfelt movie overall, but also it's like literally immediately about class warfare and like class solidarity is what the movie is more than anything. And I just thought that was so interesting because when I think back to like the kids stuff that I watched, like not that there weren't, like Animorphs is literally about the horrors of war. like, you know, there's like some hard hitting stuff, but then I look at, you know, like when I was in high school, kids were getting like WALL-E and these like messages on environmentalism. I guess I had Captain Planet. But then, yeah, seeing this movie where up front, it's like, hey, all of these people are disenfranchised and like there's like this class structure that's unfair and unjust. And like, we want to work to resolve that. And I really loved it for that and for taking that swing with a kids movie and also Transformers. And I also thought it was an interesting way to do Megatron specifically, which in that it was, and you know, it's a little bit that annoying thing of like every villain has to have a totally understandable motive and redeemable, you know, origin. But in this one, they did a good job of, you watch him slowly, for lack of better word, transform. He does not start off as this like evil, you know, whatever, wannabe dictator. He starts off as this like disenfranchised, but ultimately like optimistic, we're in this together, you know, whatever. And just over the course of the movie, you see that get chipped away at more and more as they go through this struggle of like reckoning with the world that they were born into and recognizing what it should be. It's also about an energy crisis, which I thought was, class warfare and an energy crisis. And I was like, this movie's a little too real for me in some ways. But Transformers 1, I enjoyed it. I hope they do more with it and kind of grow it, or at least do like other eras of Transformers and other movies, if not continuing this continuity. But yeah, that's what I've been enjoying this week.
Oh yeah, man, that sounds good. I'm a big Transformers fan too, which is why I haven't like watched it yet, because I felt like I was like getting too influenced by like what everyone was saying. I just want to be able to like throw it on and like without expectation. Because I remember, dude, I remember this is going to be, I don't know if I've ever even talked about this, but I remember watching the, was it 1986 movie back when I was, I don't know, like in second grade. So it was probably like 2001, 2002. And that movie comes on and I see 2005 at that it set in. I was like, oh my God, this is going to happen in 3 years. Oh. We are screwed. Like, we need to like do something. We need to like save the planet. So I think, all the things you're saying, I was like, yeah, that sounds like the old school Transformers where they were like, yeah, this is all fun and games, but like there's some really big stakes at hand here. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I like that. Not that like I don't like, not that I don't like Michael Bay Transformers. I like
the first one.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone, I think I only watched the first two, maybe three, but it just, oh, and then I went back and I watched Rise of the Beast.
I like Rise of the Beast. Rise of the Beast was, it was almost there. This sounds like more there. And maybe we just need
this
to keep
is definitely
this,
more
keep this
there.
Baby animated and then just let it rock that way.
Yeah. My issue with Rise of the Beast, and this is not a Transformers podcast after this opening, was that the beasts were barely in it. It was still a movie about Optimus and the Autobots, and then the beasts that were the title of the film were these like very secondary characters with barely any personality to them of Optimus Primal.
Yeah, they treated them like the Dinobots, and I was like, that's not what they were.
Yeah, it was really odd. I was like, the movie overall I didn't like completely hate, but I was like,
what about
all of those characters are so much more fleshed out. Like that we didn't get like Airazor as this like, you know, pacifist anti-war who spends most of her time hanging out with a tiger. And then, you know, like just all the relationships that they overlooked or altered. And I think also not really having the Predacons in it was frustrating. Like and I get that T-Rex Megatron would have stuck out a little bit more.
You just have too much. You have too much context. You have too much context for the average person.
I do. Yeah. That's
because
a good point.
I think
the average
person has no idea what.
That's true. Beast Wars was only three seasons in the 90s and then like wasn't on DVD for a long time. I don't even know if it's streaming anywhere at this point.
Dude, I feel like it was like you had to be there kind of moment for sure. Cause you,
it might have been.
I don't even know where to find it now. Like if I don't know where I could, if you could even
That's
find
fair.
It.
Probably yeah, at it, your it, local library, I'll find maybe. It. I'll tell you about it. I'll blast it. I've been talking about Ninja Turtles on Blue Sky too much. I'm going to transition and talk about Turtles Transformers too much now.
Rewatched the first one on a plane. So good.
It holds up. It's so good. If you haven't listened to the episode I did on here. Yeah, it's great. Anyway, before we get too bogged down in old stuff that we like to nerd out about as old people, where can we find you online?
Yeah, primarily on Instagram and Threads and TikTok these days. At SuperReese93 and
nice,
you know, writing up a why though, a lot about Sunderfolk and a lot about Star Wars. That's kind of my personality right now.
Awesome.
Usually Star Wars and Thing right now is Sunderfolk.
Beautiful. And you can find me on Blue Sky at Most Always Alex. I'm trying to be there a lot more than I used to be and a lot more than I was on Twitter. And don't find me on Twitter because that account is there so that no one else takes it, but I'm not using it. And with that, let's talk about going in blind.
Yeah.
So for me, there were two pieces of inspiration on this. First was Blueprints, which is a puzzle-based game that is like one of those, it's way more than it seems, and you keep peeling back layers. And so with that, it was like, yeah, you just kind of have to go, you have to go into it partly because the whole game is solving things. So if you look stuff up, you start losing the game a little bit, or not experiencing it necessarily. And then the other thing was Sinners, which, I, as of recording this, still haven't seen. As of this going up, I'm going to be seeing it the day after. I have the theater picked out. I'm going to get my ticket. But that's one where it's like, okay, you can watch, like, you know, I think I've seen like part of a trailer and a still picture, and I know that the word vampires is a part of it. And I'm going in real blind.
Yeah. As you should. Yeah.
This is a conversation to have. Yeah. And I think it impacts a lot of media, mostly stories, books, video games, movies, comics, TV. It also I think it's fair to say that it impacts experiential art, like music and art installations and all that. But that's not really what I wanted to focus on here, because we don't cover a lot of music and art installations. Yeah, so just what were kind of your baseline thoughts when I first threw this episode idea out to you?
I think for sinners, for sure, I'm in that same camp where I went in as blind as you can be. If you're from, like, if you watch a lot of movies, when you hear Ryan Coogler, Michael B. Jordan, and vampires, is kind of like all I knew. I'm down. I'm gonna be there. And a lot of, like, the people that I follow were, like, saying, go see it, go see it, go see it. So, like, that's as blind as I was, just, like, and I had a great time. I had a great time. I typically don't even like, you know, anything horror-related. I don't need, but it was so much more, again, like you said, for Blueprints. I haven't played it, but I will, off of going in blind off of your recommendation, I can go in and do that. So I think that's what I think about, you know, blind as I can be, because of I'm not a big trailer guy. I don't.
Yeah. And I knew that about you specifically because of, was it Last Jedi specifically, or was it just that era of trailers?
Just that
turned you off?
Yeah, that whole era of trailers. And I think it's a problem with Star Wars. I think Star Wars has a problem with trailers, like, in general. Like, I think they give away too much. They try to, like, bring people in too much when you don't really have to. I think you can just show flashes and be good. But I think it really started with Rogue One, where they had, like, a bunch of, like, reshoots. They had a bunch of issues with the production. But all of the trailers we got, like, wasn't, like, the product that we got. So I think that really just, you know, like, the entire, like, lines that, like, built up over the trailer over months and months and months, like, never made it in, like, the movie. So,
oh, yeah.
So it's just, it was just, like, a weird thing. And then it just... And then you have that same era with, like, Marvel, where they're not putting in, you know, they're switching out, like, what you're seeing in the trailer versus what you see in the movie with, like, CGI and stuff. And it was just kind of annoying. It's kind of annoying because I think about, like, even in that era, too, if I didn't know that Spider-Man was going to be in Civil War, would have I enjoyed, like, the movie more? And, like, the answer for me is always going to be yes. Like, I didn't need to be, like, in the trailer. We didn't need to know about any of that. And it just, like... really shifted my perspective on, like, what do I need to go into a movie to get me into, like, a movie theater seat. And usually I think it's now at this point just going in off of who's making the art. I'll go see the art. I don't really need too much more than that at this point.
Totally.
Because I risk things getting spoiled or, like, moments not hitting as hard because I have too much context, or I've already seen it. So, like, what's the point?
Definitely. Which, and yeah, like, let's talk about that, because so spoilers, like, are not all of what we're talking about. They're a part of it, absolutely. Yeah. But I think the idea is a little bit broader, because there's, do you know story elements? I would argue to some degree visual components, especially when there's, like, a specific set piece. And in the movie, that set piece is to be a set piece, to, like, set the stage. And then for a trailer, that is to get you to come see it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, for me personally, I would rather first experience that, like, in the way it was meant to be revealed, not because you crammed it in front of my face during the 5 seconds I had to see a trailer before a YouTube video.
Yeah, on my phone while I'm, like, pooping, or, you know, they're just, like, so, like, there's no better way than, like, the way that it's intended, whether that's, like, at home or, like, on a theater. But, like, those moments, I think, deserve more than... to be blasted on the social media for however long because someone's pointing at their screen, like Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, it's, you're going to have that moment. Like, why can't we all just wait to have that?
Let's just have that moment. Yeah. And it's, which it's funny, because I feel like this also, I'm, like, becoming increasingly anti-advertising as we go through this conversation, which I'm not against a movie marketing itself.
Yeah.
It's just, like, the way that they get to, like, I watched the first trailer for the new Superman movie, like the teaser, and I was like, I'm not entirely sold on this. It doesn't, like, something's a little off. And then they put out the full first trailer, and I watched that one, and surprisingly, I don't feel like I know everything that happens. There's a lot of shots that I have no context for, and it also sold the tone significantly better.
Yeah.
Did you watch either of those?
I think I watched the first teaser mainly because I saw that Crypto was there.
Yeah. So
I'm down with Crypto.
Do you mind if I spoil this a little bit for you?
Go for it. Yeah.
So yeah. So in the first trailer, there's like Clark crashes in the snow and is like super bloodied and beat up and is like, Crypto, please take me home.
Yeah.
And then the full context of that scene that is not in that first trailer, but is in the second one, is when Crypto comes running up, Crypto is a dog and behaves like a dog and is also super powered. So it sees Clark and like pounces on him to play.
Yeah.
So that it's like, he's like bleeding and like can barely breathe, and his dog jumps up and like jumps
Crypto
on his chest.
No, Bubba.
And like he's like laughing and crying and is like, please stop. Yeah. And it was like, oh, this tone makes way more sense to me for this movie. Now I'm sold. And also, I don't feel like I need to watch more trailers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
I you gave me the tone of it. I got a feel for the cinematography. I saw a few interesting things, but like, you didn't flesh out the entire story start to finish, where I'm like, oh, I know exactly what happens and what order these scenes all go in.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's one. I think also there's really, this is a conversation about expectations, and all the things that color that. Cause like, the trailer is marketing. It is not there to be on. And I don't want to say it's not there to be honest, but it's not there to be honest. It's there to sell tickets. It is a carnival barker on your phone, on your TV, on your computer, whatever. But then there's also like, you know, expectations set by comparison of, you know, if you loved this, you'll love our new movie. And even expectations by review, which I know that we're a review site and I shouldn't speak ill of that, but there's a specific type of review that tells you what to feel before you've even seen
it. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's like hard, especially for what we do on the site. I think for Tales of the Underworld specifically, I was recommending it to a friend to, you know, like, hey, like, this is coming out, it's going to be really good. And they had like no idea who the characters were. So I sent them the trailer, a trailer that I haven't watched yet. And then I went in blind to Tales of the Underworld, felt how I felt, and then told him, and he's like, oh yeah, that's kind of what it seemed like from the trailer. And I was like, oh, which I need to go watch. I need to go watch to see what the trailer gives
away. See if
away.
It's accurate.
Yeah. To see if it's accurate. But I was like, oh, I didn't expect that like at all for this. And that's what I got. So it felt different. So yeah. And I think if I would have like known that the entire time while I'm thinking about what I'm going to write for my review, I don't know how that would have shaped my viewpoint of it. Cause I think they do. I think they, you know, I think they wanted people to think that Superman was like, you know, broken, beaten, so that they can get like a bunch of clicks online, just so that way, as we get closer, you give the other tone to be like, oh, haha, just kidding. And that feels disingenuous a little bit to me.
Yeah. Especially because the second trailer to me was significantly more charming and more interesting.
Yeah.
Like, we've done Grimdark Superman. We don't need it.
Yeah. Like, you would have bought people in with the first one. Like, why do, or the second one. So why do the first one? Because the second one seems vastly more interesting to see Superman as than what we've gotten. And then for them to be like, oh, it was like the most, it wasn't one of the big buzzes that it was like one of the most watched trailers of all time.
Oh, probably.
And like, it's like, why, since when do we care about that? That's when do we care
about
that?
I feel like every video on YouTube becomes the most watched at some point.
And this is no dig at Honest Trailers, but Honest Trailers, how are you giving out teasers to your next videos for trailers of movies?
I hate that.
I hate seeing that on my feed. Like, oh, what are we doing?
I also just feel like a grumpy old man the more we talk about this, because like, Honest Trailers and Cinema Sins at this point are both channels that I just refuse to watch.
They have a couple good ones here and there, but this one just feels like, oh, okay, now you're trying to get me to go watch the video instead of just letting the concept of what you guys do sell the thing. It's just, it is marketing. It's marketing, and
yes,
it's tough to avoid. I'll say
definitely.
That.
Definitely. Which, and yeah, like, while we're talking about like that input, I think we should say, this is not something that I specifically wanted to say is not a part of this, is like instinct. Like, I, you know, so like saying like, I don't need this to be marketed, like, just like, let the thing sell itself. Yeah. I know a guy who hated Hereditary, hated Midsommar. So his instinct was that he was going to hate Bo is Afraid. And then he watched it and was like, actually, that's my favorite Ari Aster movie.
Yeah.
He went in with like, oh yeah, like I didn't like his other efforts. I know what he does. My instinct is that this won't be good, but I'm happy to be proven wrong. And I think that your instincts based on like, that's a funny comedian, that's a good writer, that's a solid director or cinematographer or whatever. Like those are not the same as like just being inundated with how to feel and what to think before you even see it.
Or
knowing the story before you see it.
Yeah.
But something that you had brought up is like this idea of like doing your homework. Also not necessarily a part of this, but do you want to explain more of what you mean by that?
Yeah, I think that there's like a certain point with the thing that like you don't need. It's hard. Yeah. So for an example of Brave New World, I think was very, very great with all of the context of the 11 years you have of Sam Wilson and Anthony mm-hmm. Mackie, Sam Wilson to base it off of, from VA, vet counselor to the Captain America mm-hmm. taking on the Red Hulk. It's crazy. Like it's a crazy comic book arc that I think if you go in blind and you only go see Brave New World and you haven't seen anything since Endgame, if you haven't like done, you know, quote unquote, done your homework, I think your expectations of the thing is going to change. So
definitely.
I think there's a big difference between going in blind and going in, I don't know, prepared or aware.
Yeah. Well, especially as we get more and more giant franchises that are like 20 movies or 7 books or whatever. And it's like, yeah, you got to know a little bit. Like you should,
I think it's weird because like I can't remember like growing up as a kid and needing much more than, and I mean, this might be old Manny, I guess, but like from what these things are based off of, mangas, comics, books, like you don't have trailers for that kind of like physical media, right? You don't have like, you mm-hmm. might have like a blurb of what's to come or something, or maybe like a page or two of what's going to be happening in the next issue, or you have Kyle Haybar telling you, you know, next time on Dragon Ball Z, like that's all you really have. And then you're just like there for the next thing. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, and if you need to do more context or you need to go do, if you need more of the thing, you don't need it from a trailer. You need it from going back and like rewatching Winter Soldier so that you can appreciate that interaction with him and Bucky later on. And I don't think that should be, as the same as going in blind without like knowing huge story points.
I think going in blind is like about what you know about this next part.
Yeah, exactly. The next part, the next issue, the next arc, the next whatever.
If somebody was like, I'm gonna go in blind to Return of the Jedi, and I was like, cool, have you seen A New Hope or Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah. I think the re-release of Revenge of the Sith is a great example of, if you haven't, I heard someone say after they came out of watching it, just like while we were leaving, that that was just like when I watched it when I was whatever, or like when I was like younger or whatever.
Huh.
And I was like, that's crazy to me because we've had so much more content about Anakin Skywalker in that time in between, and like this is the first time we've seen it in theaters since like all those things have like happened. So for me watching it, and I was like, holy moly, like this movie is a little bit different, right? Like it's different now with the additional context. And they just didn't know. They just didn't know. I don't know if they've ever even seen Clone Wars. I don't even know about Clone Wars Anakin. Like, that's crazy.
That also makes me think, like, part of this conversation is, it's for everyone, but it's also for kind of, like, people who want to thoughtfully engage with what they're watching.
Because
I recognize not everyone's going to put in the work or have the time to put in the work.
Yeah.
But I do think it's worth it and rewarding, but we'll get into that.
I mean, we're nerds, so I thought we were all nerds here, so I thought, like, doing homework is what we like to do.
Everyone who listens to this is probably some amount of nerd. I think with movies, too, like, the big benefit is you let it, and we've already alluded to this, but you let it unfold naturally.
Mm-hmm.
You get to go in and just watch it, and you see Anakin slowly turn to the dark side, and then very quickly turn to the dark side, like, you know, going from I'm not sure about this to let's kill some kids in about a half hour.
I think it's tough.
I think that it's, you know, watching it unfold, because like we said earlier, trailers are marketing. They are meant to bring you in. They're not always accurate. A lot of times they're not accurate in a bad way, where the trailer sets a high expectation that the movie does not meet.
Yeah.
You've seen the list, and I have some favorites, but do you have any trailers that you were like, man, that trailer looked so good and that movie was so trash?
I haven't watched a bunch lately. Really, I really legitimately don't watch very, very many, but I think the ones you have here on your list, I think Ragnarok is probably a really good example for me.
Yeah, because that one, it wasn't
Kingsman,
even like...
maybe not, I don't think the Golden Circle one, but the one before that marketed Channing Tatum as like being a big part of
it. Oh, no, that's Golden Circle too.
Okay, is that Golden Circle too?
As well?
Yeah, that's I think that's like the last one that like really upset me too, that we marketed Channing Tatum for the entire movie.
Yeah,
and then
Channing Tatum's in this. He was in it a couple scenes.
Yeah, a couple scenes, and then he was dead, even though he was in most of the trailers.
And the big disservice from that trailer, at least for me, was that a character who died in the first movie is in the second movie revealed to have survived and come back, and they put a shot of him in the trailer.
Yeah.
Now, I do think this was maybe a little bit of like dysfunction on the production side, that nobody told the studio editing the trailer to not use that, but it made it in the trailer, and so people who watched the first movie and saw that character die then watched the trailer and were like, why are they back?
Why did you do that?
And it was also like, clearly I think it was that they had an eye patch too, so it wasn't even like, oh, maybe it's like a flashback. It was like, that's clearly new footage of them.
Yeah. Like, they clearly survived.
So, yeah, there's that. There's Ragnarok just straight up changed where scenes happened, edited out Thor's missing eye.
Yeah.
Like a lot of stuff. And that, I mean, to me, that tells me that Disney knows that trailers are doing too much.
Yeah.
That they, I know that you had another example, but it's escaping me from Marvel.
Infinity War, where we have Hulk running in, but it's actually just Bruce Banner in the Hulkbuster.
Yeah. And I was like, all honestly, right, yeah, you're doing
CGI,
this as
like.
Sleeves. You're doing it, yeah. And then, yeah, the other two for me before we get off of trailers, Suicide Squad.
Mm.
Other than the line, what are we, some kind of Suicide Squad, the trailer looks really fun and campy and ridiculous. And I guess maybe that line is also campy and ridiculous. That movie sucks. Like, it is indefensible. I hated it so much. But the trailer looked promising and looked fun and over the top.
Yeah, that's a that's a good one for sure.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said I didn't get suckered in by that. I didn't see it in theaters, but I watched it knowing that it wasn't very good. But I was like, how did that trailer translate to a terrible movie?
It's Skybeams, man. Skybeams. It's my.
I think the other one for me was the Great Gatsby trailer of all things, Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby. Only because the trailer is like, it's all of these like pulsing shots through the story set to Church in the Wild.
Oh.
And it was like, oh, like this looks really fun and really cool. Like Baz Luhrmann has had effective use of music like in Moulin Rouge and stuff. Like, I trust this. And the movie wasn't bad, but it wasn't really what that trailer promised either.
Yeah, that's not, I can't remember the Great Gatsby trailer, but that, having seen the movie pretty recently, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's shots of them joyriding in the car, set to Church in the Wild.
Who makes those calls? Like, who makes those calls?
Right.
And I know that you have marketed images here, and I think just back to like the Superman one, there was a big stink about the Superman still poster, right? Of him putting on his boots.
Oh, I mean, well, I know that there was some weird right-wing backlash about how it was like effeminate to sit or something. I don't know.
I didn't even know that. Oh, man. We just care too much about like these marketing images that are generated to make us want to talk. We're being controlled, man.
Yeah.
This is an anti-marketing podcast.
Yeah, there was something like that. And I think there was, I know a lot of people dogged on the suit for not being like skin tight, which personally I kind of feel like is a good choice.
I mean,
at least visually sets it apart. I don't know. But yeah, I'm sure that there was also like some kind of a people getting pissed about that. And again,
why is Superman? Why does he need to sit down to put on his boots?
Because he's
when there's
like
a giant
us.
Sky beam going on
Superman's
in the background.
A regular person
there's a
like
sky
you
beam. That, who, not hashtag not my Superman. Hashtag
not
Snyder
my Skybeam.
Not my Skybeam.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, trailers are just a really interesting part of this because it mixes in that spoiler element, but yeah. Then also just colors what you, like, very much like geared to tell you what to think and to think very positively and in the best possible direction. Like, I've never seen a trailer that's like, it's pretty good. We think you'll be okay with it. But like, there are movies that I watch where I'm like, yeah, it was pretty good. Like, wasn't the best thing I've ever seen, but I had fun. But like, no trailer is ever going to sell itself that way. And I mean, we're at the point where we're getting like teasers for the teaser for the real trailer. Yeah. And yeah, it's just, it's a lot. And I feel like that's where I'm less inclined to watch trailers now. I won't not watch them, but it's something that I am more calculated with. And I feel like you're even more calculated than I am on it.
Dude, I, for the Star Wars trailer specifically, I was like just waiting until like the movie until Kate came out for AMC, you know?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to see, I don't, it's not worth, because everything we're talking about, right? It's just, I just feel like I don't want to be marketed to. Just tell me who's in the movie. And I'll go see it. Or I just care more about like, oh, if Alex says, hey, this was pretty good, I'm gonna think, okay, yeah. And I think that's like where the review part comes in. So if I won't go look up a review, but I won't look up a trailer, but I'll go look up to see what Kate said about the movie if I knew that she reviewed it. So I'll go do that. I think there's alternatives to trailers, and this might be, you know, just because we were writers, but like that's how I feel. I think that that markets the movie more to me than a trailer does. So I think that's kind of like where I'm leaning more to.
Yeah.
To kind of even just like avoid like the discourse of the thing. But yeah, like I'll wait the extra 20 minutes to not see the trailer. I think the only place that I do is like at the Draft House, which we're getting one down the street from my house. I'm very excited. But yeah, it's I'm avoiding. I'm not gonna go to YouTube to go watch the trailer, you know. Remember the Super? I don't know if you're a Super Bowl guy, but like the commercials that were like, watch the full trailer now on YouTube, and it was like a 15 second thing, like it was like a teaser for the trailer, just like you're saying.
Because we don't want to pay for the full 30.
We don't want to pay for
Super
the full
Bowl
30,
time.
But we're gonna go make all the money off the YouTube view thing, and then say,
You know, I wonder how much of that is like, let's pay for 15 seconds and we'll probably pay for the commercial with YouTube.
Exactly.
Revenue.
Exactly.
Well, and I think the other thing on this too is, like you had said, discourse earlier, I feel like online discourse almost like it moves too fast for you to even fully process what happened and like to digest, but it also like sometimes moves too fast for you to get to the table where it's like, if you didn't watch this movie the Friday that it came out and it's Sunday, doesn't matter. You're getting opinions, you're getting spoilers, you're getting
screenshots. Felt. Yeah. Sinners felt like everyone wanted to talk about it. And I felt like I had to go see it now.
Yes. And I should say, like,
to go in blind.
It's good when a movie is like generating that much buzz for itself. Like when people are like, I can't not talk about this.
Yeah, because I haven't seen I don't think I saw a trailer for it. I don't think I saw one trailer for it. I don't think I saw anything for it, like even on like on TikTok. I think that was completely just my friends were talking about it, and I wanted to go see it because I wanted to go in blind, you know, to our conversation. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go in as Ryan Coogler decided.
Yeah, and I think that that's the thing is I want to, you know, being part of the zeitgeist. I'm not going to say it's not fun. I want to, but there's just that weird pressure to like see things as fast as possible because if you, no one's going to respect that you haven't seen it online, which, you know, I do and don't get. Depending on how people approach it. It's one thing to just like post your thoughts. It's another thing to seek out people who say they haven't seen it and, you know, spoil it.
Well, it's just free speech, Alex. So just like trailers should be.
But yeah, I feel like with movies, like really like dodging trailers, seeing it as soon as you can, like those are kind of the ways to go in blind. But going back to your point too on reviews, finding a website and or reviewers who you kind of like, you have a feel for their taste and you can read the review and get an idea of what it'll be. Whether you agree or disagree with their opinions, I think that getting a site that you trust is more about like how many publications sent people who don't like horror movies to review horror movies.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then it's a bad review and it's like, okay, don't trust that site because they don't give movies a fighting chance. If you are sending your person who only reviews rom-coms to review like whatever new horror movie, it might not be a great review. It might be good depending on how objective they can be, but if it if the review starts with "I hate horror," it is not going to be a fair review.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then I guess the other thing I want to talk about in the stories part, and we can go a little bit faster through this. How do you feel about it with video games? Because they are more expensive, so I totally get people not wanting to go in completely blind. Because spending, you know, $15-$20 on a movie ticket and then being like, oh, that was all right, it wasn't great. Spending $70 on a video game and then being like, this sucked, is a way worse feeling.
I mean, I feel like I think the average like movie date's like $60 at the movies these days, right?
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, for two people, you probably get snacks, more out of all that.
Game, maybe, but I don't think for me, I don't think it's like riskier in terms of price. I think for me, that's more of like, I'm going to be touching this for a long time. Am I going to like it? Right. Mm. I think the time I'm putting in is different than in the movie where I'm just like, ugh, I just wasted 2 hours of my life,
yeah,
versus I'm going to be sinking 40 hours into this. Hopefully, is it going to be a fun 40 hours? And I think for that, I look for more like gameplay footage. I think gameplay footage means more to me than any kind of like procedural or like cinematic that isn't actually indicative of like the gameplay. Like World of Warcraft is a great example, man. Cinematics don't mean nothing. They're just like story beats.
Totally.
Like they have no bearing on like how you actually play the game sometimes. So
and they might not even match the game visuals.
Exactly.
If the cinematics aren't done with the engine.
Yeah. So like though that stuff for me is completely fine. I just want to see like what the game mechanics look like more than anything.
Yeah. I think that's the main thing that you do actually want to like spoil for, because if you pick up a game that's 20 hours and you hate the core mechanic, you're not finishing it.
Yeah. And that's hard to know.
That's why.
Unless you have someone to tell you, you know, via review. But if you don't know, you gotta.
Yeah.
I don't like
platforming. That's why I tell people, like, you know, with Blueprints, I love it. I've been telling everyone about it, but I also have been very sure to clarify, it is the kind of puzzle game where you have to literally take notes, because that, for some people, is going to be a big turnoff and is going to be like, that's not the kind of puzzle game that I like. I'm good.
Yeah.
And so it just feels like something that you should put out there up front. And going back to find reviews that you trust and reviewers that you trust.
For Blueprints, is there like a trailer, or how did you get into it?
I just had seen people talking about, like, Jesse Vitelli, friend of the podcast, talked about it on Blue Sky. I follow a video game podcast called The Besties. They talked about it. And everyone that I heard talk about it, it were people where I had a sense of their game taste and where I aligned with them. And then how they were talking about it, I was like, I should go check this out. Mm. And so I just heard, like, it's a really in-depth puzzle game, but it's also a roguelike. And I was like, I have no idea how those go together, but like, let's do it. And it's genuinely been very fun. I've really enjoyed it. But it was one that I got through trusted reviews and, you know, doing a little bit of research, because the gameplay, it's boring. You're literally walking around and clicking on things. That's the gameplay.
It reminds me of Eternal Darkness style, like, you're going through some spooky stuff just from like the trailers.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, you walk around, you go in a room, you solve a puzzle, you solve the next puzzle. You realize that thing that you saw 10 hours ago in the game actually is really important. And now you have to go do, and like, it's a game that very much reveals itself as you go, which is another reason why I was like, oh, this is kind of like an inspiration for this episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like it's just
Grim Fandango-esque.
Yeah, and I feel like with video games, that's the thing, is like you highlighted, is, you know, get familiar with the game mechanics, figure out how it works, and like, you know, figure out if you want to do it and if it's going to be something that's interesting to you for that. But
yeah.
I still stand by avoid story elements if you can, because that's, you know, it's not the end of the world with video games. Like, not every game has this amazing story to tell, but some games do. So
yeah, I'm trying to think.
It can
about,
definitely be
yeah,
worth it.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't even like for, you know, like the. You know, rip E3 and all of like the big video game conference stuff, but like, yeah, like thinking, when was the last one I watched? Nintendo Direct. I mean, there wasn't very many.
Yeah,
you know, you're not doing story components. You're just like, here's what you're going to be playing.
Here's Donkey Kong. He could break everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's
sold.
Here's Zelda. There you go.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're doing in Zelda, but here's Zelda.
I feel like kind of tying the video game short conversation and the movie on together. The big thing with this is it's not about not having expectations. It is about knowing how to like fine tune and temper your expectations. Because I don't think expectations are inherently bad.
Yeah.
I will see a movie because I like the artists involved. That is an expectation that I have. It's more the expectations that tell you what to think. Mm-hmm. Like we've talked about, we don't need to rehash that. And I think, you know, too, that it works for and against the movies. Going in hearing only really high praise or only really low praise, both of those are going to kind of color it. And yeah. It, you know, for better or for worse, like if it's a really like pretty mid movie and all you've heard is that it's terrible, you're probably going to like it more than you thought you would. And for the movie, that's a win. But yeah.
That's how I felt.
If you've heard this is the best movie that's ever happened, and or like this is the highlight of their career, the performance of a lifetime, mm-hmm. and now you're like, well, I've seen their other work, and now I am expecting a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah.
And you know whether or not the movie delivers, who's to say? I think it's. I mean, for me, it's that like art is about what you feel.
Yeah.
A little bit about what it teaches you, and I feel like letting your expectations be too colored or too set by outside forces is where you kind of do a disservice to that.
Yeah, and I think the other part of it too, I mean, it's just your experience, man. You get to do like whatever you
yeah.
want. Like, you get to feel however you want, right? And I think where these expectations get dicey is when we start, you know, doing things like release the Snyder Cut type things, and we're terrible to people online.
Yeah.
And I think like that's like where the expectation tempering and like needs to be checked, like outside, like once you leave the theater, feel mm-hmm. however you want. But because these expectations are so high, because things are built up for so much, because of all this marketing that happens, there has to be like some kind of responsibility to be like, we need to like, I don't know
yeah.
how you fix it or how you stop doing it. But I think it's such the visceral reactions that happen after feel more damaging than like any trailer that I watch that spoils like a story point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like we just had like less going into it, and then we just have to like talk about it to kind of like generate the buzz and do the things. That seems like a better like use of engaging with like the media to get what like your point of what you see these stories as. And that's how I see it too. You know, like the context of what I'm looking at is important. Why the person who's making this is important. That's the kind of like trailer or teaser that I want more of. Like if I don't know about a director, what other stuff did they do? Okay, cool. Maybe yeah. I'll like what this is. And I'd much rather do that. And I think that's why it's easier to do with things like comics and things like video games and things like books, because you have to like, there's no trailer. There's less trailers for that kind of stuff. So maybe that's a different way to engage with the media, but Yeah,
and comics is actually a good example. I remember reading, like this is like 10 plus years ago, but somebody said, if you want to get into comics, start by following a character that you like,
yeah,
and then pay attention to who made it, and then go look up their other work. Like, don't say like, oh, I like Marvel over DC, I'm only reading Marvel comics, or I'm only reading Spider-Man comics. Yeah. Like, read that Spider-Man comic, enjoy it, and then be like, oh, who drew this? I like this art style. What else have they drawn? What else have they written? Like that, you know, mm-hmm. track it down that way, and then you will be finding art that you enjoy that, you know, because, like, I love Spider-Man. There's some bad Spider-Man comics. Like, you are not guaranteed a banger just because it's Spider-Man. The Clone Saga happened. That's all I have to say. That was like a 5-year disaster in the 90s that pretty much everyone hated. It's like, start with you know, like the access point is, what characters do you like? And I'm not going to tell someone like, you should know comic writers before you read comics. Like, no, just, you know, pick something. Like I'm a big Swamp Thing fan. Read Rom V's Swamp Thing, and then was like, I really loved how this was written. I'm going to go find other things that he has written. And I found like banger after banger.
Yeah.
Many Deaths of Layla Starr, phenomenal comic. Rare Flavors, phenomenal comic. And all because I liked the Green Monster. Like, that's, yeah, you know, and I found this really
crazy
cool thing. So I think just kind of bringing it all together. Like, it's not bad to have a spoiler, you know, pop up before a YouTube video. It's not bad to watch a trailer or to read a review. It's all in like how you engage these things, and are you able to like are you able to try to maintain your opinion to some degree?
Yeah.
And like let you be the judge of exactly. how you feel.
Yeah. Can you resist like the marketing of what they're trying to give you when you do engage yeah. with the things that are very clearly meant to be marketing tools and less about like generating excitement about the things? I feel yeah. I think other great alternatives outside of trailers are interviews with the cast and crew. I think the director interviews yeah. and the actor interviews, I think, do more for me now than any trailer would. Like, how are the people who are making this talking about it? And I think that just comes from like a level of respect of just who's making this thing that I'm going to go watch.
Yes.
Especially these days, man. Some people are problematic yeah. and I'll actively avoid their projects. And I love Michael B. Jordan. I wanted to see more of him, hearing him talk about the movie, hearing Ryan Coogler talk about the movie mm-hmm. with some of like the people that I follow, generated more buzz for me than any trailer would have. So
yeah.
Engage in other stuff to go in quote unquote blind.
Yeah. I also want to go back to Snyder Cut very briefly, because I think the interesting thing with that is, so we all saw Justice League and it wasn't a great movie, but we knew that it was like two different directors working with just an okay script and, you know, all the production drama and, yeah. and, you know, production, like bad things that happened that we know. But when they were like, yeah, there's like a 4-hour version of this that is the original vision for it. And I was like, I'm interested to see that just as a curiosity.
Yeah.
But the way that the fandom like whipped itself into a frenzy and convinced itself that it would be a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And it's like, no. You saw the original movie. You can only polish a turd so much. You need to like watch this realistically, like go in as a curiosity. Like director's cuts to me are very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see like, you know, what did someone, cause there are times where it's not better. There's things that were cut for a reason that didn't fit or broke the flow or tonally dissonant. Like director's cuts are not always good, but to me it's just interesting to see because it feels like a step of the creative process.
Yeah, exactly.
And so yeah, like I'm not against them, but this assumption that there was that the Snyder Cut would be a good movie was just kind of erroneous. And again, that like mob mentality, like that everyone
too much context.
Who wanted it. Yeah.
Yeah, too much context is bad context sometimes too, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Because to what you said, can you temper your own expectations? Can you control, you know, your emotions to like let the art speak for itself before you make like any final judgments on it? Harder for some. I don't want to say harder for some people than others. I think it's just harder for some projects with our own like biases and things along that nature more so than I think, you know, the media literacy part. So, because I want to like give people benefit of the doubt that like they have the media literacy to do it. But
yes. And yeah, I think that's the thing too, is like this is useful for everyone. Like we talked yeah. about earlier, this is not just something for like the critical minded or like literal critics.
Yeah.
Everyone I think can have a good good experience and relationship with art by letting themselves just experience it. And yeah. I guess I should be clear. This also isn't like against like trigger warnings. You can listen to episode 70 if you want our full thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Like I still want people to look out for themselves. Like don't waste money on a game that you're going to hate. Don't watch a movie that's going to be like traumatic for mm-hmm. you. But you know, just like letting yourself experience something new and experience something without knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I think the trigger warning thing, I think, is a great example of some expectations that you should have going in, like Andor. I don't know if you saw the stuff for Andor that's mm-hmm. going on for season 2, where they had an essay that ended up with the Imperial being dead, but there was no like trigger warning for it. And there are definitely people in the community who were really upset. And rightfully so, because like I think for something like that for the first time to be happening in Star Wars, I don't think you need to go in blind to something like that.
I'm kind of surprised that Disney didn't put a warning up about that.
Tony Gilroy,
you've caught up on Severance, right?
Yeah, I'm caught up on Severance, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and granted, this is season 1 Severance, but there's an episode that opens with, hey, this is about to depict suicide.
Yeah.
And it was like, all right, cool. Thanks for that heads up. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything like wrong with that, right? Especially for something that isn't like in line that's going to be jarring because it's the first time you're ever depicting that in live action. Is going to be jarring for people, especially for, yeah, but you know, it's neither here nor there. But yeah, I think they should have done one for that, but people were like making excuses that this is like the best thing that Star Wars has ever done, so who cares about a trigger warning? So then it just becomes like this, like too connected to the media and not enough connected to like the person who's watching it somewhere that you have no connection to, who is triggered, literally triggered by seeing that in a piece of media that's supposed to be an escape. You know what I mean? So I think that's where the marketing should be more towards, or like the going in blind shouldn't be completely blind. You should know what you're going into, especially if they're going to have, you know, and same thing for I think they did do a trigger warning for the Order 66 in The Mandalorian, that it was going to depict like child, I think that's what they did, or something related to that, because it was just off the back of a mass shooting in the U.S.
Oh yeah, I do remember something about that.
So like, why not do that for this? I don't know. It's weird choices that we have no control over, and I don't need to be
angry
about it. But it's something recent.
But yeah, so all that to say, like, I support people looking out for themselves. I support people liking the thing that they like. I mean, I talked about it earlier. I watched Rise of the Beasts because I like Beast Wars.
True.
It wasn't a good movie, man. I made a mistake. It wasn't a bad movie, but it wasn't a good one. And so, yeah, it's just, I don't know, like the things you like, watch stuff, be informed about what you're going into. But like, I'm realizing this isn't even an episode about, it's not about spoilers. It's not about context. It's not about any of the things we've been saying. This is about media literacy. Yeah. I want people to have opinions, but I want it to be their opinion.
Yeah.
Like that's what I want. That's why I wanted to have this conversation.
Yeah. And I think the best way to do that is like we've said, outside of like letting the trailer and an online discourse about something who you have no idea who that other person is, go to people you trust in their media literacy to let you know whether or not, you know, it's something that might or not be for you. Cause I don't think you need too much from a trusted source to go into something.
Totally.
Whether it's in review form or off the back of like you said before, Googling their next work or off of the first work that you like, and then going off from there, I think works just as well. So,
yeah, definitely.
And that's just media literacy, which is great. So go to your local library. Go ask your librarian.
These are books that I've liked. What would you recommend in that vein?
Yeah.
Exactly. And yeah, local just, I don't shop, know.
All that stuff.
Yeah. Have your own opinions. Have strong opinions. Just let them be yours. Have good interactions with art. Have positive interactions with art where you think and feel and are enriched for doing so.
Exactly.
Realizing that all I want is media literacy. At the end of this episode is not where I thought it was going. Do you have any closing thoughts?
No, that's kind of it. I just go engage with media and engage and support your favorite artists and your favorite reviewers, like the one over here at But Why Though.
Love that. That does it for this week. If you listening at home want more, we do have it. We're a whole podcast. This is 80 episodes in. There's plenty more in our back catalog. You can also find us on Blue Sky at butwhytho.net, and you can donate to the site or subscribe to our newsletter by going to butwhytho.net/support. Everything that you give goes towards keeping the site running, keeping the lights on, paying our writers, all that good stuff. It is how we make this. So anything you can give is greatly appreciated. And Adrian, thank you for joining me. I had a good time talking with you about this week. I hope you did too.
Yeah, always great time talking with you, Alex. I always come away with new stuff to go engage with. And that's, you know, the whole point. So thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
And yeah, hopefully the people at home did too. Thank you so much for listening if you are at home. And we'll see you next time.